Howdy folks, welcome back to DeathPit.com. I am Uncle Bill.
And I am the Creepy Kentuckian, if you will. And this week is the second part of the Linnea Quigley interview, which we will get to in a few minutes.
That's right. This week we've got the later stages of Linnea's career, which is, you know, even as entertaining as the earlier stages, in my opinion. Now,
as you all know, last week we went up to Return of Living Dead. This week is everything after that.
That's right. And, you know, it's a great interview. I want to make sure y'all get to listen to it in its entirety. You don't want to censor anything out.
We're nice like that. We do stuff like that for the fans, because this show is for the fans, by the fans.
We've also got some info and news regarding our participation in Fright Night Film Festival, which we will be attending shortly.
FrightNightFilmFest.com. Mm-hmm. You can check that out. And we have an array of DVD reviews, as always.
We do.
We have the short film collection from Mr. Patrick Ray. You can check that out. Mm-hmm. We're going to be reviewing four of his short films a little bit later.
And some luscious short films that they are.
Yep.
We've also got a movie here from a friend of the show, Terry M. West, who sent Satan Schoolgirls in for us to review a while back. He's a great TNA director. This one's called Flesh for the Beast.
And we also have a new movie from Anchor Bay and IDT Entertainment. This film is from director Chuck Bauman, and it is The Tooth Fairy.
And finally, we've got a little thriller from overseas, and in the style of Brian De Palma's Sisters. This one's called Twisted Sisters.
Oh, my God.
That's right.
All right, so we're going to have all that, and not much news. We'll get into the news. Not a whole lot of stuff going on this week.
Doesn't appear to be, no.
But the first thing up is probably the biggest item of the week, I think, maybe. A new interview with Wes Craven is floating around out there, I believe, about a Last House on the Left remake. Now, this is a direct remake, not the Chaos film, which, you know, we'll be talking about that in a few weeks. This one, along with longtime partner Craven and Marianne Madalena, along with Sean Cunningham, who was the producer of the original Last House on the Left as well. Rogue Pictures and Craven have forged a relationship for the film and are eyeing an early 2007 start date. Rogue will retain worldwide rights for the remake, which follows the exact same storyline as the original. And Wes Craven has said that all of his films are in talks for a remake, including Shocker and The People Under the Stairs. So, more remakes, folks. Can't get enough of them. It's almost like Lay's potato chips. You can't have just one.
Yeah, and I would just keep a little bit of, you know, suspicion about the Shocker and People Under the Stairs remakes for right now until we, you know, they're officially announced, but it's possible they've remade worse films than that.
Yeah, but they're remaking Chud right now.
Yeah, that's true. That. But yeah, and with Craven, much like with Tobe Hooper, they are really trying to cash in on films that didn't make them a lot of money from the past.
Well, but they basically have to, especially Tobe Hooper.
Yeah,
I mean, what does he have left?
That's very true. Yeah, but you know, the sad thing about this is with Romero and all these damn Day of the Dead remake, Creepshow remake, and he's not going to see a single penny of that.
Yeah.
Well, there's been some talk about, you know, him being a bad businessman, but I don't think that was probably not it at all. I don't think he controls the business aspect. He's just a director. I think he just got screwed, basically.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion. So moving on, though, another piece of news about the Fearmonger series, which is like the independent version of Masters of Horror. And apparently apparently there's been some lineup changes, and some people have left, and some people have been added, apparently.
For a second time, I believe.
Yeah, people leaving often on this for some reason, but Nick Palumbo, who's the guy who created and produced the project, with Ryan Nicholson says that Dante Tomaselli and Douglas Buck are out. Tomaselli, of course, did Satan's Playground. And the Sisters remake was Douglas Buck's claim to fame. But he's happy to announce that directors Kareem Hussein, who did Subconscious Cruelty, I've never heard of.
Is that one of Saddam's boys?
Yeah, didn't get killed. Richard Stanley, who did Dust Devil, and Ethan Dittenmeyer, who was doing St. John Smith, has been doing St. John Smith.
The elusive movie that will probably never be seen.
But those are the new additions, and he says that also Jim Van Bibber, who will write and direct, you know, the Fearmonger's contribution, will also star in his own episode.
Yeah.
And there'll be a Fearmonger's panel at the East Coast Weekend of Horrors Convention taking place September 29th through October 1st at Meadowlands Crown Plaza.
That's right.
In New Jersey.
Look forward to the Fearmongers. Hopefully they can stick with some of those guys and not have any more.
Yeah, I mean, there must be some
musical directors or whatever, you know.
Yeah, must be something going on behind the scenes of that.
Got news on, you know, we talk a lot about documentaries on horror movies on here. You know, we've talked about the H25, the 25 Years of Terror Halloween documentary.
Mm-hmm, which was a great documentary.
Yeah, but a lot of people know about the Document of the Dead, which was the Dawn of the Dead documentary.
Another good one.
There's documentaries on Scream Queens we've talked about on here. This next one is the Jaws documentary entitled The Shark is Still Working. Mm-hmm. And this one's produced by Eric Hollander and J. Michael Roddy. And it was born on the 2005 bash, which took place at Martha's Vineyard, which is where they filmed the movie. And will include interviews with Steven Spielberg, Roy Scheider, Richard Dreyfuss, producer Richard Zanuck,
mm-hmm.
and composer John Williams, screenwriter Carl Gottlieb, production designer Joe Alves, and other cast and crew involved in the movie. In addition, other filmmakers will also be interviewed, such as Bryan Singer, Kevin Smith, Robert Rodriguez, and Eli Roth. They share how they were inspired by the film Jaws. And Roy Scheider is going to narrate the documentary. And there's also a couple other interviewees they're going to have on here. Tom Savini, who we've talked with,
mm-hmm.
and Greg Nicotero, who is evidently a major collector of Jaws memorabilia. I love how Eli Roth squirms his way into every little thing like that.
He does, and for some reason he gets it through either Rob Rodriguez or Quentin Tarantino,
yeah.
Which I don't understand that either. It may be possible that we just don't get Eli Roth.
Yeah, I don't think we get him.
Because apparently we don't get a lot of films, a lot of things about
films. Let me just say this to people. If hating Eli Roth is wrong,
I don't
want to
be
right.
And moving right along, here's some news that I'm sure is just going to thrill the shit out of all kinds of people, because I'm pretty sure there's already been 5 or 6 different releases of Evil Dead by Anchor Bay.
Yeah.
But apparently
15 or 16.
Yeah, there's going to be another DVD of the original Anchor Bay is going to release another DVD of the original Evil Dead. And for this release, the ladies of the Evil Dead have been making a documentary for a couple of years now, and it's just going to be about them and their travels around the conventions. Yeah. So that's going to be a new aspect of the DVD. The documentary will be, I think it'll be over an hour. And there's also been some talk about Within the Woods, which is the short film that was manufactured to get promotion and advertising for what became Evil Dead.
I believe it was actually on YouTube, but I think it was taken down really quickly.
Yeah, there will be no official release on this next version of the Evil Dead, unfortunately. And he says, Sam Raimi says he doesn't really know if that will ever be released on anything. But Ellen Sanweis, who was one of the latest Evil Dead, recently said that as far as the rumors about the Evil Dead remake go as well, she knows about as much as all the rest of the fans do. One minute you hear that it's happening, the next minute you hear that it's not. She's not been contacted about anything to do with the film.
Of course she won't be contacted.
And she probably won't.
That's how those movies work. Like, yeah. The small independent movies, like Evil Dead, or just look at Texas Chainsaw, like when they even did the sequels.
Mm-hmm.
The original cast members got fucked. And they basically, Alan Danziger talked about that on here, too.
That's very true, yeah.
Toby Hooper could have brought Gunnar Hansen back and actually paid him something the second time around.
They offered him scale, I think, plus 10%.
He chose to fuck him over. Mm. And that's the kind of guy that Toby Hooper is. And I'm personally glad that, you know, he's in the shitter as far as directing goes, and he probably always will be from now on.
Yeah, he's not a very well-liked or respected director from
this. I think Sam Raimi is getting a little bit egotistical now, too. I mean, we all know that Bruce Campbell is pretty much an asshole.
Yeah, he seems to be.
Those movies, Evil Dead, especially the first one, that's just one of those movies you can't remake to me. Nobody can remake it.
Yeah, you can't remake it.
Sam Raimi couldn't even remake it and make it the same.
Well, he basically did with Evil Dead 2, but it wasn't as good of a film.
No, it didn't have the creepiness that the first one had.
It's trying to be more slapstick. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know that much about Sam Raimi and his business and goings on, because I don't think he ever directed anything I liked except for Evil Dead, to be honest. I know he directed Dark Man. I don't like that movie.
There's something
Spider-Man,
about
I didn't like
the,
that.
Danny Elfman, who did the Spider-Man 2 soundtrack or something. Yeah, he basically said that he would never work for him again because he was pretty much a dick. So,
but which is odd because, you know, having read about the way that he started out, you know.
But you got to look at it like this. When he's getting these big million-dollar pictures, multi-million dollar, what was it, Spider-Man, $100 million at least opening weekend.
Yeah.
You're going to get an ego. And that's just how it goes.
I'm just saying that it's kind of disheartening that he would start out with such a low budget, low means type of career, and he finally gets some success and then turns into an asshole. But
that's how
it usually happens. I think Peter Jackson, I don't even think Peter Jackson's that bad, though. Because he's still, I think he was more of a fan of the genre than Sam Raimi was. I think Sam Raimi was just trying to make money.
Yeah, as I remember, Peter Jackson was actually in the Bravo's 100 Scariest Movie Moments. Wasn't he interviewed on that?
Yeah, I believe he was.
He didn't have to do that. You know, he made a ton more money than old Sam Raimi did with those movies.
But I digress.
So what else we got? We was talking about Kevin Smith and the Jaws documentary.
Yeah. And
he's working on a horror movie.
Yeah.
Supposedly. He was talking about...
We talked about this last week, actually. There was a rumor on the message board.
There's actually a quote we can use today. He says, "It'll be pretty different from anything else I've done thus far. That's as much as I can tell you. There may be a few chuckles in it along the way, but it won't be comedy horror. It'll be chills and gore."
Yeah, there was a press conference that he did where he kind of did a soundbite where he said he was going to do a horror film for his next movie. And then the message boards over at View Askew went crazy, and now it appears that he really will be doing it, which I didn't think would actually happen, to be honest. I thought it would just be something that kind of came and went.
You actually remember Jay and Silent Bob's in Scream 3?
Yeah, I guess that's true. Sad that is. Okay, we got to talk about this. I don't really want to, but it's just a must. The Hostel 2 casting
news.
That's
one of my most... I'm looking forward to that more than any movie
in
the
next
5 years.
I'm gonna split this up into one big thing, because there's also news about the 2002 Maniacs casting, which is, you know, they both related to Eli Roth in some way, unfortunately. But for the Hostel 2 casting news, apparently Lauren German, Heather Matarazzo, and Bijou Phillips, which I thought was an odd choice, are in varying stages of negotiations to star in Hostel 2. So that comes from Variety magazine.
Three vanilla whores.
That's right. But they would be this time the story would follow three women who, while studying abroad in the summer, learn the grim truth behind the Slovakian hostel and its international counterparts. So they would be the three main victims, I guess. And who really gives a shit? But let's move on to the 2002 Maniacs casting news. It appears that returning for the sequel are Adam Robitaille, Krista Campbell, Ryan Fleming, Jay Gillespie, and Dylan Edrington. There's also been new casting news that Amy Benica is the new Maniac Scarlet Red. And that's all that we know about that right now.
As long as Huckleberry's back,
yeah.
All I care about, dumbass.
He's back. But that is casting news from two films. One I'd want to see and the other one I could give a shit less about.
Yeah. So I guess we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with some more news and get right to the Linnea Quigley interview.
Only here on DeadBit.com. Attention all horror fans in the Midwestern United States. It is...
It came from Lake Michigan.
Racine, Wisconsin's only horror film festival. This October 20th through 22nd, you can get to meet...
Lloyd Kaufman.
Brink Stevens.
Fred Olen Ray.
Debbie Rochon.
Susie Lorraine.
Jason Paul Cullum.
Amy Lynn Best.
And Scott Goldberg. Join them along with other independent filmmakers for the
It Came From Lake Michigan
Film Festival, October 20th through 22nd, 2006. Go to itcamefromlakemichigan.com.
Welcome back here at Dead Pit Radio, and back to the news section. Apparently, for celebration of the new two-disc special edition DVD of A Nightmare on Elm Street, which is something that a lot of people have been waiting for a very long time.
That's right.
Because it's basically a bare-bones edition that's out right now. There will be a screening in theaters across the country. It'll be selected theaters because, you know, it won't
be... So if you don't live in a big city, you're fucked.
Exactly. But on September 20th and the 21st, Nightmare on Elm Street will be playing in theaters across the country. The screenings will serve as a preview for the DVD and will include a special Freddy's Best Kills feature, which will only be shown during the two-night event.
Right.
So there's some information about that.
I'm looking forward to that DVD, actually.
I really am, yeah.
We got news on the Dark Shadows 40th Anniversary Festival.
Dan Curtis.
Which will be held August 25th and 27th at the New York Marriott, which is the Brooklyn Bridge, 333 Adams Street in Brooklyn.
Newark.
More than a dozen members of the original cast will be in attendance, including David Selby, Lara Parker, John Carlin, Catherine Lee Scott, John Lacey, Donna McKenzie, among others, supposedly. Festivities include autograph signings, Q&A sessions, a costume contest, and dramatic performances. For more information, visit DarkShadowsFestival.com.
Did they get Jonathan Freed for that, or is that guy just basically confined to his house now?
Hey, I hear that he's really sick. Really ill, mm-hmm. And even if he wasn't, I doubt he'd be there. He just doesn't want anything to do with that series anymore.
Yeah, that's kind of sad, too. I kind of like Dan Curtis' stuff, though. He's kind of like a Roger Corman-ish type of guy.
And actually, John Carlin, if you remember last week we were watching Trilogy of Terror, he had a small role in that.
Mm-hmm.
The guy played Willie Loomis.
But anywho, apparently there's a new box set coming out. That for all people that like the Alfred Hitchcock Presents series, and I know we're big fans of Alfred Bitchcock here. Universal has announced that the second season of Alfred Hitchcock Presents is set for October the 17th. It will include 39 episodes of the series for around $39.98. The 5-disc set includes full frame presentation, Dolby Digital 2.0, and they haven't included any extras yet, but it will probably be about as bare bone as it gets considering the last Series 1 set.
Get that. I did like that series, but
yeah, I did too.
I don't know if I liked it enough to buy a big box set for
them. They used to show that on USA all the time.
They show it a lot, like really late at night.
Yeah. But anyway.
Really quick, I want to mention, though, that the Saw 3 trailer, the teaser trailer, you can check that out now at apple.com/trailers. And I checked it out, and no surprise, it looks horrendous. So, there's that.
I don't know why you wouldn't like that. I really don't.
Also got news on The Hills Have Eyes sequel for the remake, The Hills Have Eyes. It looks like actor Derek Mears has landed the role of mutant sidekick, which was Michael Bailey Smith, who was Pluto.
That's the shittiest looking makeup I've seen in a long time, though, for anybody like K&B to come up with. Yeah.
And you may remember Myers, who's been in plenty of TV shows, and a friend of the horror genre, supposedly a friend. He's a werewolf and cursed.
Oh, shit. Really?
Yeah.
God, that movie was almost as good as Red Eye.
Yeah, so, I mean, maybe he can be a good cannibal for the Hills Have Eyes Part 2, which is supposedly going to hit theaters March 2nd, 2007, and I'm really looking forward to that.
I know.
Especially when it's directed by Martin Wise, who I believe is a fucking music video director.
You mean to tell me folks
are going to see how valuable Alex Aja was for that first movie. Okay, when you go see part two, you're going to see how horrible that'll be, and I predict it right now. So,
yeah.
We're spreading joy to the boys and girls.
I can't believe they'd let a music video director direct a feature film. I've never heard of that happening.
I don't know. Other people
that seems silly.
Like that. Yeah.
But
his Little John music videos were killing.
Yeah. I thought Yale was good.
Crunk is off the hills.
It is. I mean, but here's a couple of really brief news stories for you. If you go over to www.ifilm.com, you can search for clips from the Grindhouse movie. They've got some brief little snippets of stuff that was shown at the San Diego Comic-Con.
Oh, God.
And you can check that out over there. Also, and this is something I wanted to mention because, you know, they're friends of the show. Troma is having a 25% off sale on all their DVDs at Troma.com.
That's right. You can go and get period piece. Mm-hmm. If you ever want to see a guy wipe his balls with a bag of frickin' pork rinds,
mm-hmm.
you can see it in this movie.
You want to see somebody have sex with a stuffed bear constantly, you'll see that in there, too. But you got to admit, Troma's completely unique. And anyway,
if anything,
they're having 25% off sale. And so you can check that out. And that's really all I've got about that.
I just got a little tidbit of news here about the follow-up to Lance Wyler's international successful award-winning film, The Last Broadcast. Now, this movie is known as the precursor to the Blair Witch Project.
It is.
And this was out before the Blair Witch Project, and as we all know, nobody's really heard of The Last Broadcast, whereas
it's all about marketing, folks.
Everybody's heard of Blair Witch. Anyway, though, Head Trauma is the new film from Lance Wheeler, I'm not sure how you pronounce it. It's a story of George Walker, a down-and-out transient who travels back home after 20-year absence only to find his house, where he spent his summers, condemned and slated for demolition. George initially wants to fix up the house and sell it quickly, but after he takes a header, he begins to experience a series of disturbing nightmares. The nightmares depict the murder of a girl by a strange hooded figure.
God.
Is it a Klansman?
It might be.
Slowly,
it could be a druid.
Could be, yeah. Could be Friar Ferguson.
Mm-hmm. Could be a evil dwarf from Phantasm.
Could be. Slowly, elements from the nightmares begin to cross over to George's reality. Now, you can check this movie out. It's going to have a theatrical screening. We got the schedule for you. 15 cities or something like that.
Mm.
August 18th, which is tonight. It's going to be in Portland, Oregon at the Hollywood Theater. And on August 25th, you can check it out at Tucson, Arizona, or Albuquerque, New Mexico. And, you know, if you want to check out all of the dates for the theatrical screenings, just go over to Heretic Films' official website or Head Trauma's official website and check that out.
Which, by the way, we will eventually, in a couple of weeks, I think, be reviewing both those movies, The Last Broadcast and Head Trauma.
Yeah.
And I guess, real quick, I want to mention this. People just leave Joe Dante the hell alone about remakes and shit. What in the hell? I'm not kidding. In the last probably 2 months, I've heard about remake rumors for The Howling, Piranha, and now they're wanting to do a sequel to Gremlins. So this is the latest news. And apparently, Joe Dante was doing an interview, and he brought up the fact that they'd come to him and ask him, you know, that they were going to do a sequel to Gremlins, but they didn't really know how to do it because the original Gremlins was all based around puppetry and animatronics and stuff that, you know, that kind of
stuff that really isn't used anymore.
Yeah, so they were trying to figure out how they're going to make it CG, basically. And he told him he was completely against them doing another Gremlins sequel because he was completely against them doing the first sequel. If you listen to here's the funny thing, too. If you listen to the commentary track that he did for Gremlins 2, it's one of the funniest damn things ever. He basically just bashes his own movie completely throughout that commentary track. But yeah, so there's rumors on that. And then there's the Death Race 3000 Roger Corman sequel that's currently in limbo right now. But he says that eventually that movie will get made if he has to produce it himself. Roger Corman being the independent producer and director that he is, he'll eventually get around to it. I think it's a sequel to Death Race 2000 or a remake of sequel or yeah, something like that.
I just can't help but shake my head.
Yeah, I know.
All this bullshit. So that's all the news that I have. I mean, do you have anything else?
I don't have a fucking thing.
We got a couple of screenings that we always talk about on here. The Summer Camp Film Festival, double feature horror classics, continues this week. It's a really good week, actually. You're going to have John Carpenter's Halloween, 35mm print of that, along with Wes Craven's 1996 classic Scream. You can check those out.
I just shit my panties.
Yeah.
I also want to mention, before I get to the DVDs, one last thing, that Shriekfest announced recently their finalists and the screenplay finalists for their Shriekfest Film Festival.
Yeah.
So if you go to Shriekfest.com, you can take a look at all the people. And I think it's on the message board, too, along with there's a thread on there about the Rhode Island International Film Festival. You can check that out, too, with both film festivals that we support here at Dead Pit. So you can check both those out on the board.
And we also need to let everyone know, the independent filmmakers out there, until August 24th, you can submit your independent film to the Fright Night Film Fest. And it's the first annual in Louisville, Kentucky. Go to FrightNightFilmFest.com for all the info on that.
And did I mention we're going to be at that?
We're going to be there.
We're going to be there. Meet and greet.
With Gunnar Hansen and John Dugan.
That's right.
From the original Texas Chainsaw. And I want to tell Gunnar Hansen that I hope he gets his hands on Andrew Bernersky one of these days. Because yeah, I'm seriously
you know, that is something you don't ever see, is those two guys at the same convention.
Yeah.
I've never seen that, I don't think.
I swear to God, man. Like, I hate that fucking guy. I can only imagine how much Gunnar Hansen hates his ass.
Yeah.
Also, yeah. Though, Metropole NYC is going to have a screening of Day of the Dead, and I'm sure Scott Goldberg will shit himself over
that. Yeah, we're going to get into that a little bit later, because that's going to be hilarious. But here's the DVD releases for August 22nd, which is next Tuesday. You got H6, Diary of a Serial Killer, which we reviewed on here, which is a pretty good movie from Tartan. You got Demonic, a.k.a. Forest of the Damned. You got Satan's Playground, which is Dante Tomaselli's film from Anchor Bay. Silent Hill, which comes out on DVD from Sony
Pictures. Which I hope to God that somebody sends us a copy of that, because I just can't wait to review it.
Yeah, and then you got Sea of Fear, which is Lionsgate's mandatory film for the week.
That's right.
And the Eastern Horror 4-Pack from BCI Eclipse, and that is the DVD releases for next week.
Well, I'm thinking about it, though, and I know we read a lot of fan mail on here, and that'll be in the segment after this interview coming up here in a minute. I want people to email us. What do you think about Lionsgate's direct-to-video horror movies? I'm just curious what the other people think about them. Are there any that you watch that are good?
Memorable, perhaps?
Yeah. Because, you know, we don't get screens from Lionsgate, and thank God.
If we did,
because we would have what, 1 week at least, double that.
I'm pretty sure that my body would atrophy if we had screens from Lionsgate.
I don't see how they do it.
I'd be in the house all the time.
I don't see how they release that many movies. I mean, think about it.
I think they've turned into like the Hammer Studios of the day, you know, just
release. Yeah, but it's really not them. They're just buying the rights to.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
A lot of cases. Anyway, though. I guess that's it. We're going to go to the Linnea Quigley interview.
And I guess this would be a great time to thank Linnea Quigley for giving us a full hour of her time again.
And if you stay tuned to Dead Pit, next week, it's a possibility we might be able to announce something cool that we're going to give away. But, you know, I'm not going to mention it now because I don't want to get people all moist for no reason. But there's a possibility we'll be giving something cool away next week. So
get ready to get trashed once again as we play you the second part of the Linnea Quigley interview here on DeadPit.com.
I guess we can talk about Nightmare Sisters. How did you get involved in that movie?
I got involved because I started working with David Dakota on, like, helping him co-produce in that with the first one we did was Creepazoids. Then we did Murder Weapon and, oh, there's so many. It's like we did a whole bunch of them. And so on Nightmare Sisters, we thought it'd be a fun idea to do, you know, the nerdy girl that, you know, become possessed.
Yeah.
And we shot that in 3 days.
Wow,
that's awesome.
And they gave me those teeth the day of filming, and we had this long dialogue, just this one shot in the beginning. It was like, oh, man. Longest shot in the history, I think.
Now, was that your first movie with Brink?
I think, no. I'd done Sorority Babes and the Slimeball Ballorama with her before.
Okay. That was, okay, I thought that was after him, sorry.
I'm trying to think myself.
Yeah, I don't have it down here.
I think we did Sorority Babes first.
Okay.
And then, I think.
Okay. Were you guys friends from the start? I know you're pretty good friends now.
Yeah, we had probably been in the business about the same amount of time, even though she, early on, was really into acting and, I guess, going to conventions and things like that, where I had no clue about that. We found out we'd been at the same auditions at the same time, because she has a picture of something that was on the burner for a TV show where it's a picture she's in and I'm in, and we didn't even know each other then, so it was weird.
Yeah. But with films like Nightmare Sisters, I was curious because it has a predominant female cast.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, was there a big difference between the atmosphere on the set as opposed to now, maybe? I mean,
yeah. It was a lot more fun then. We got to make a lot more decisions on our characters and pretty much say or do what, you know, we wanted as long as we hit our mark. Mm-hmm. And it was like a family, you know, the same wardrobe people and makeup people and cast. So it was more fun. It wasn't like going on the set and you don't know anyone and you're more nervous about it.
Yeah.
Did David Dakota, was he pretty strict, or did he allow you to improv a lot of stuff in those movies?
Sometimes he'd be strict on the dialogue, and sometimes if you did something that was working, he didn't care.
Yeah.
It depended what it was, but we had a script supervisor there so that, you know, if it wasn't really fitting for something later on that we needed to say, then, you know, we have to do it again. But mainly it was like one take all the time. We'd have to get it in one take.
Yeah. I was going to ask about Sorority Babes. That was one of the few movies that I remember seeing where you were given a lead role as like a badass character.
Yeah.
How was that experience different for you?
Oh, it was great. He had asked me which part I wanted, and I said, I want that one, you know, the spider part.
Yeah.
And like I said, I like playing the strong one and something different than, you know, just the girl that gets killed and runs and that. So it was really fun to play somebody really mean.
Yeah, I really loved that role. you worked with Hal Havens in the Sorority Babes and Night of the Demons. I was just
and what's it called?
Witchcraft.
Yeah, another Kevin Tenney movie. How is he to work with? Is he really like that character? Because it comes across that way, that he would really act like that.
Yeah, he is like that. He's very funny, and Hal's great to work with. He's not a problem at all. Yeah, he kind of is just like he is.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
Yeah.
During Sorority Babes, I understand that the film co-stars Robin Stiles.
Oh, yeah.
And I had heard that you had actually been injured by her because of circumstances, I guess, time. She was a heavy drinker.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she, in the scene where we have a little fight before I set her on fire, she, was very, very, very drunk. I guess she brought these things called some kind of iced tea. It's, like, got a lot of liquor in it. And
Long Island iced tea.
She was pretty drunk, and we have a fight scene. And I'd never been hurt before because, you know, both people usually know what they're doing or they work it out. But she pushed me real, real hard, and I ended up getting my arm right on the edge of this, you know, the metal shower thing. So it kind of swelled up pretty big. And in fact, there was another thing that happened where Brink got really hurt. This one girl was a little crazy, and there was a little thing going on about something, and they had a big fight scene in the mall where Brink had the princess outfit on, and the other was the Bride of Frankenstein, and they had a fight, and her knee went to the size of a grapefruit, so she had to go to the doctors.
Oh, man. So there were some injuries on the set of that movie, then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there were some injuries. I mean, mine wasn't that bad, but I was just upset that they let her do that when she was drunk, you know?
Yeah, that is a bit unprofessional, really.
Yeah, it is. I've never seen that before, where they let somebody work drunk like that.
Yeah. But if in any movie I would think that an injury would occur, it'd probably be in Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers.
Oh, yeah, I did get hurt, actually, when the headbutt comes in, when he wants to knock me out, to take me out of there.
Yeah.
Fred says, oh, you got to sell it. You got to really, really sell it. And it was the last scene of the day, and the actor, Jay, really, really headbutted me. In fact, they didn't even use sound. The sound was loud enough, and oh, my head hurt so bad.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But luckily, nobody got hurt with the chainsaw.
Because
that would be much worse.
Yeah.
But I was a little freaked with them.
Yeah, I guess Gunnar Hansen's got experience with chainsaws.
Yes, he does. Yes.
How's Fred Olen Ray as a director that I work with?
Fred's real sarcastic, and you never know if to believe him or not.
Yeah.
He'll do things like, if you have a long dialogue, he'll say, if you get it in one take, I'll give you a quarter, which makes you more nervous. And he'll do little things like that. And, you know, I did want to earn that quarter, so I did it.
Some folks may not know that you were in Nightmare on Elm Street 4, I believe.
Yep.
As a soul in Freddy's chest. I was always curious how they filmed that shot.
They made a huge, huge, huge Freddy. We were in like a warehouse, and it went way up to the top. And they had a lady on the top working the top part, and then there were three of us on apple boxes, those little boxes.
Yeah.
And we had on these, they were like tights, body tights, and they painted them. So it looked like some sort of weird thing, you know, coming out, you know, up there. And actually, oh, God, you're asking about all the things that happened bad. they were doing it, and they had the camera moving around, and it was very slippery because all of our bodies were covered with KY jelly. And the Freddy wasn't fastened down enough. And it came flying down, just missed the camera, and the three of us toppled down. And the poor lady, that she was probably in her 60s up top working it, had to go to the hospital because it was a cement floor.
Oh, man. Yeah.
That she hit, and she was very high, but she was fine.
But the makeup effects guy that designed that was actually, wasn't it Steve Johnson?
Yep.
Who?
Yeah, exactly. He almost killed me.
I'm not sure. Did you meet him on that set or the set of Night of the Demons?
That was Night of the Demons.
Okay. They're both in the same year, I'm pretty sure.
I think so, too. It's weird. I lose track and then of the years that all these movies happen, but it seemed like that year and the year before were just real busy.
Night of the Demons, though, is probably one of our favorite films, aside from Return of the Living Dead.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We actually interviewed Kevin S. Tenney on here about the film.
Oh.
We're just curious how...
He was great.
Yeah, we're just curious how you got involved in that film.
I got involved. My manager called me that I had an audition, and I told him I wasn't going to go because it was asking for teenagers.
Yeah.
And I'd been on auditions, and they go, oh, well, you're too old, and blah, 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 and I was tired of that. And I said, well, I'm not going to go. I said, I'm not a teenager. They're not going to want to hire me. And then he called me back again. No, they really want to see you. And I still was like, I'm not going to go because, you know, it's going to be a waste of time. I'm not a teenager. And, you know, and then he called me again. No, they really want to see you. They like you're acting in all these other movies. So I went. And I got hired right away. And I was like, whoa, this is good.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that Kevin has tended to say that he really is a huge fan of your work. And he would work with you anytime.
Oh, that's so nice. That's so nice. I hope that I can work with them again because Kevin is a really nice person.
Yeah.
And a really good director, too.
Yeah, I believe he's in pre-production on a new movie, so.
Oh, well, then you better hire me.
Yeah, really. But I suppose that I've always been curious if you saw this film in theaters because I believe the first shot, one of the first shots in the movie that you're in, is an interesting shot.
I remember that still. I was working on something else, so I didn't get to go to the screening. And, you know, I went to the drive-in, and I was totally shocked because I forgot the sequence they filmed it in.
Uh-huh.
And I just went, oh, no, oh, no. This is weird because I totally had forgot, you know, because it's like, 8 months to a year after you finish a movie that it might come out or even more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I just went, oh my gosh, but luckily it was a drive-in, so I could sneak out of there.
Was the sour balls line always in the script?
Yeah, as far as I know, it was, and the worst part of it was I didn't even get the joke when I said it. That's pretty bad.
Yeah.
But
I didn't even get it, and then I had the worst time saying wuss. I didn't know if it was woos or wuss, or I was like, and the harder you try to remember a word, the worse it gets.
Yeah. But by far, though, the most memorable scene in the movie, and probably one of the most memorable scenes in any horror movie, is the lipstick scene. The
original scene, too.
Yeah.
That was my favorite scene.
Yeah. I know Steve Johnson had created the prosthetic chest and everything, but how exactly did that work? I mean,
Okay. They had made the mold, like you do, like a life cast with everything, and then they bandaged down my breasts, and then they put the prosthetic over them, and then they glued down the edges, and then they had made a slit on the side where I would be putting the lipstick.
Yeah,
but It was hard because I'm right-handed, and I ended up having to use my left hand to try to make circles and go into there. And then they had the buttons on the dress. They had the stuff like fishing line.
Yeah.
So that the buttons would all come off, you know, like real quick.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was I just took the lipstick and went around and then just found where it was slit, and you couldn't see it, and I just pushed it in, and that was one of my favorite scenes.
Yeah.
Because I guess...
Definitely memorable.
Yeah, I guess all the people that went to the theaters went, oh my God!
Yeah, the first time I saw it, I was like, what the hell? How'd they do that? You know, because I know that was before computer stuff.
Yes. Yes.
But
I know, so now you don't know what's what. I like the old effects.
Yeah, I did too. There was a lot of heavy makeup in that, though, for you with the demon makeup and stuff.
Yeah.
What was that process like? How long did it take to put all of it on?
That's the one thing I hate is facial appliances. The last day, it took like 11 hours at least. It was for a shot that was going to take place when the sun came up, so we all had to come in early. And it was Randy Cook was doing my makeup, and he's a really good makeup artist and director, but he's, like, meticulous.
Yeah.
And, well, actually both him and Steve were both meticulous on their things, but he would, like, put some makeup on and then step back and look, and then more and look. And I was just going, oh.
Yeah.
I mean, he did the makeup until, you know, it was time to go, except for a break for lunch, but it, or dinner or whatever, at 3 in the morning. But you don't feel like eating because you feel so gross.
Mm-hmm. I've always been curious about that kind of prosthetic makeup. How hard is that to take off?
Well, after you've had it on for that long, you want to, I've been bad and, like, kind of torn at it. But
yeah.
It takes about, if you know, they have the brush and the stuff to take it off. It takes about maybe an hour to get it off you.
Yeah.
Like, all the makeup I had.
I bet that's cringe-inducing to wait to get that off like that.
Oh, you just want to get it off. Like, it's one thing that bothers me. Some people like it. I cannot stand it.
Yeah.
On my face, because it's like they use that medical glue and they say it's safe, but it really isn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially around your eyes and everything, and it just feels so gross in it.
A lot of the cast of the film, though, were really great. I know Mia Kincaid.
Mm-hmm.
Did you become friends with her on the set?
Yeah, we were good friends. I mean, I liked her character more than I liked mine. Like, you know, because, you know, she had the mean part and cool dress and everything. But
yeah.
Mimi was really nice.
Have you kept up with her today?
No, I haven't seen her in such a long time. It's horrible. I've really lost contact with a lot of people except for, like, Beverly from Return of the Living Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know these people, but not very well, because we always used to work together.
Yeah, last I heard that Amelia was like a pet psychic or something like that.
Yes, that's what I heard, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I've heard all this. I just haven't, you know, been around there to really see it.
Yeah. But you went on to work with Kevin Tenney again in Witch Trap, so I understand that you two probably have a mutual admiration for each other.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. He directs just like he is in real life, just like a nice person. You know, doesn't yell at people, keeps his patience, and stays upbeat, which is hard to do when you've got all that pressure on you.
Yeah, I know. Throughout the '90s, you did a ton of films. I'm just going to ask about one, though, that I really remember is Jacko.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Which, yeah, I always did like that movie. What do you remember about filming that one?
I filmed that one, and that was fun because I did, like, a behind-the-scenes thing when I was filming it, so that made it fun on a real nice camera they gave me, and I remember it was in Florida, so I thought it would be pretty warm, but they had, like, a cold front come in, and they had a heating pad on the camera. I don't know if it was 16 or 35 millimeter, but they had to have a heating pad on it, and I had to borrow the director's wife's down-type long jacket. It was freezing.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And I just remember Steve Latshaw was really easy to work with. And the only bad thing was that the taxi got me to the airport like 5 minutes too late, and they closed the door on me, and I had to wait 6 hours at the airport to get another flight.
Oh, man. I know another film that I recently saw came out around that time was Death Mask.
Oh, yeah. That was another Steve Latshaw. That one was cool because I know that James Best is a great actor.
Yeah.
And I auditioned in L.A., and I was just really happy I got chosen to act with somebody that's such a great actor. I was very, very happy. And it was like a fun character to play. And he's just a great actor.
Yeah. I have to ask this question, but
You worked on a film called Pumpkinhead 2?
Yes.
And it actually had Roger Clinton in it. It was Bill Clinton's half-brother. I was just wondering if you ever got a chance to meet him.
I never got to meet him because I only worked on that, I think, one or two days because it was like a weird situation where I was working on Beach Babes from Beyond, and I was cast last minute on it. And my manager talked to David about it because I had already, you know, signed for Pumpkinhead.
Yeah.
And David went nuts because I was working on this other film and closed the set for a few hours and had a fit until it could all be figured out. It was really weird. So I had to be like in the daytime in Malibu and then filming Pumpkinhead at night out, clear out in the valley, like way out there. But I think I only worked on that for a night. But I didn't meet, one of the Clintons, which would have been fun.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
That would have been fun.
I know you do a few conventions a year.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of the fans? And have any of them ever crossed a line or scared you or anything at these conventions?
I've been lucky. Only a couple of them have crossed the line or tried to cross the line. They always have security at the conventions, but there's been a couple that definitely have problems where wouldn't want to be walking on a street alone.
Yeah.
And if someone causes a big problem, they will kick them out, or watch it and that sort of thing. But you have to be careful. And, you think sometimes you're just being nice to someone and they take it a totally different way.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
It's hard. It's hard to know who's going to be a nut.
I know conventions are pretty controlled, but have you ever had any problems with, stalkers or anything of that nature?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
And usually if I know the stalker, I let them know and, make sure that they don't allow this person in and that kind of thing.
See, that's a very common theme among the women that we've interviewed on this show.
Yeah.
I think the horror fans are a bit obsessive, maybe is the best word.
I don't know. The soap opera fans are obsessive, and so are the ones, there's so many. There's groupies for vets and all kinds of things that I've heard of, so.
Yeah, there's fanatics for everything, I guess.
Yeah, so I've had mainly very good experiences, and the people usually are into animal rights and love animals, and they just love horror films.
Yeah, you've worked quite extensively in independent horror films, and I was just curious, what do you think has changed about that since the early days in the 80s with Charles Band's studio?
I don't think there's as much freedom. It's more a formula now, or actually it was more a formula probably 5 years ago. Now it's getting a little looser.
Yeah.
And that's good. It's getting back to making it whatever it is and more shocking and not playing it safe.
Mm-hmm.
I hated that movie Scream. I don't know why. A lot of people loved it, but I could not stand it.
Yeah. Well, how do you feel about the state of horror films now?
Mainstream
horror films.
The mainstream ones?
Yeah, like such things as
the remake craze and all that stuff.
Some of them are good, like The Hills Have Eyes. But it's hard to get the same feeling and that as the original one. And people are very, very, very used to seeing all the CGI, so they expect more. So they're kind of jaded.
Yeah.
But I think that they're writing them better and putting more twists in there. But people are jaded because when I used to watch them, even Alfred Hitchcock just hinting at something was scary.
Mm-hmm.
So there was something about the movie that was scary without having to show a bunch of blood or whatever.
I've noticed a lot of the movies that we reviewed on the show, like Rockville Slayer and Zombiegeddon.
Mm-hmm.
You seem to be doing a lot more cameo roles than, like, you know, feature roles.
Yeah, and that's probably because of me moving, which wasn't good. They were doing a lot of filming in Florida, and when I moved, they stopped doing it for the most part. And, you know, when you're there in L.A., you know, it's easier, but if you're here in Florida, you know, it costs a lot more to bring me in and pay for this and pay for that. And, you know, unfortunately, it was a bad move for working.
Is there any upcoming films where you're more featured?
Yeah, It Came from Trafalgar.
Okay.
That's a very fun, really different one. And I'm trying to think what other ones. It's hard for me to think because I was pretty much bedridden for 1 year here, and then the next year it was both my parents, and that was over a year, so I had to turn down a lot, unfortunately, in those 2 years, and that hurt. But I would say It Came from Trafalgar is going to be a very good one.
Cool. What's the latest on Wolfsbane?
I haven't heard. I need to get hold of the director to find out about that. I forgot. Yeah. There's that and Miss Maniac I filmed.
Okay.
And those two, I've got to find out when they're coming out. I have no clue.
Yeah, I'm really interested in seeing that one.
Yeah, me too.
There's another
film. I definitely want to see that.
There's another film, too, that I am curious about, which is Dust to Dust.
Yeah, and I haven't had a update on that at all. Have you heard anything?
Well, we interviewed D.T. Carney, and this has been, what?
Back in February.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
And he'd said that it was in production.
Well, I think it's like, isn't it like an anthology? And I think he filmed the first part of it already, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, really? Okay, because I haven't heard anything. It's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we'd be really interested to see how that turns out, though.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling, though, that we were talking about remakes before, that it'll only be a matter of time before Return of the Living Dead gets remade. And possibly,
oh, I know.
Possibly Night of the Demons. I guess I was going to ask you what you felt about that.
Well, a little upset because it's like they, on both those, they promise, we'll bring you back for all of them, you know, for working on this one. And, you know, they promise you everything and then you don't get it. So,
yeah, weren't you supposed to be in the sequel to Return of the
Living Dead? Oh, yeah, both of them. Mm-hmm. They promised and promised and, you know, never did it. And you never know why they do that.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
It's weird.
There's also a big Return of the Living Dead reunion coming up, I believe, Monster Mania.
That's right, I'll be there.
Yep.
In Cherry Hill.
Yeah, Cherry Hill, New Jersey.
Oh, yeah, that'll be good.
How do you feel about seeing the whole cast again, or well, most of the cast?
Yeah, that'll be good because I missed the big thing because of I had to be with my parents of the one at the Egyptian Theater, which I heard was amazing.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you about a couple of projects here because you have several listed, and I'm not sure that we know which ones are in production or filming or whatever right now. But there's one called Voices from the Grave.
That, I'm not sure what's going to happen with. I haven't talked to the director.
Okay. And Hoodoo for Voodoo?
Okay, that one, I forgot about that. That one, I think, is going to come out pretty soon. They're great people to work with, and that was just a really fun movie to do, playing a Mambo queen.
Yeah.
And trying to find that accent. Oh, boy. It's hard to find that.
Yeah.
But I had a great time doing that. I think it's going to come out pretty soon. They're really pushing it, and it was just fun.
Yeah, I know Riff Raff's another one, too.
That's right. Now, on that one, I don't have that big of a part, but it was fun to do.
Also, I forgot to mention this, too, but you also wrote two different books, which I have tried for a while to find. I'm Screaming as Fast as I Can.
Oh, yeah.
What is included in that book? Is it stories about films?
Yeah, it talks about, like, the different things that happened on the different films. And that's the second one. The first one is the Chainsaw Bio.
Uh-huh.
And then that one, it just tells stories and has some pictures, you know, about what happened on different film sets and, you know, things in my life and that kind of thing. And then also Skin, which is a take-up of Madonna's book Sex.
Okay. But I guess that's all we got, unless you would like to add anything else, maybe something we didn't mention.
Just that it's been fun, and now that a lot of things that were pretty bad last couple of years, I should be changing around. I don't know if Florida's cursed me or what. I had a big accident a couple weeks ago that totaled my car.
Yeah, I know you mentioned you were trying to find a new car, right? I didn't know why, though.
Yes. And, you know, I can get back into working, which I love, and catch up with a lot of people that I used to talk to all the time, and, you know, we'd all film together.
Yeah, well, we all look forward to working again.
Oh, thank you. You'll have to let me know what you think of Hoodoo for Voodoo.
Oh, yeah, we'll see.
I think that'll be the first one out.
Yeah, we will eventually see all these movies, I'm pretty sure. But,
oh, good. It sounds like you've seen a lot.
Yeah, we have.
All right, y'all. You're listening to Dead Pit Radio. Keep it that way. I'll come over there and put my boot all up in your ass.
Yeah.
Bye.
Hope you all enjoyed that interview. It was one that made us oh so very moist.
Yeah, it's quite impossible that you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed doing.
Yeah. But I guess we need to announce that next week, it's back, folks.
Yeah, it's coming right now.
The Horror Roundtable returns on next week's show. We're going to have some new topics.
Some new bitching.
Yeah. A lot of complaining.
Mm-hmm.
One way or another.
We're going to have the inevitable mention of remakes, even though
we... Just to piss, who is it, Rusty off?
Yeah, there's a couple people on there that don't ever want to hear us talk about remakes again.
I'm sure somebody will bring it up.
Yeah, I know they will, but...
But, yeah, we're going to talk the roundtables next week. We're not positive on who's going to be there yet with us. We've got a good idea on one person. But the other one's up in the air. If you think you would like to participate in the Horror Roundtable, give us your application.
Send
us your resume.
Send us your resume along with a headshot, and we'll take it under consideration.
Yeah. And you know, if you can find any hot pictures of naked girls, send those along, too.
Yeah, that's right. And you can send that to www.suckthefuck.com.
So let's get the fan mail questions and all that stuff. We usually talk about this time. You know,
it's been interesting
show.
It's been an interesting fan mail section here recently, all hell broke loose apparently on the.
We'll be talking about that a little bit later, but we got something from a new member on the board by the name of Joe Evil. That's a killer name.
Mm-hmm.
I found the show about 3 weeks ago, and since then I've downloaded every show to my iPod and listen to them for 8 hours a day while I'm working, and they really make the time fly by. I agree with 99% of everything you guys say. That's pretty amazing, actually.
Yeah, it is.
I love 80s movies the best and hate remakes, too. Of course, we hate remakes. I think that you guys are funny as hell, and the whole show is great from start to finish. This show is the best thing that's ever happened to me in my entire life. It's even better than the first time I got to suck a boobie.
Really?
I find that hard to believe.
Me too.
I used to think I saw every horror movie there ever was, but this show has opened up tons and tons more for me. I now have like $1,000 worth of DVDs in my Amazon wish list and order some off of it every month. Well, damn.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to say thanks for showing me all the great independent movies that I missed and some of the older 80s movies that I missed out on. Keep up the good work, and hope you never stop doing the show until you're both corpses.
Well, that looks about the way it's going to go right now, but I'm just curious, though, if this is the best thing, you know, even better than sucking a boobie. Is it better than sucking a nipple? And you can email me and tell me that. That's right. But we do appreciate that. Appreciate any...
And if there's any women out there, is it better than sucking a cock? I just want to know.
He's curious about sucking cock all the time. But...
No, I'm not.
Anyway, this next question comes to us from a guy by the name of Adam Stretch Armstrong. And he says, hey guys, great show last week, as always. You seem to bash Hostel in nearly every show. And to be honest, this has probably caused me to want to see the film more. I may just rent it and see how bad it really is. Well, you're in for a surprise, I'm sure. Anyway, I'm curious to know if you've seen any films recently that you thought were worse than Hostel. Or is Hostel officially the worst movie of all time? Well, I'll tell you what, it's not the worst movie I've ever seen, actually, amazing as that is.
No, we've seen a lot of movies that people sent us. It's a lot worse than it is.
I can remember one called Frankenstein's Bloody Nightmare that was worse than Hostel.
Yeah.
I mean, it really was worse. Chiller, Wes Craven's Chiller was worse than Hostel.
I actually think the Fog remake was worse than Hostel.
I do, too.
The thing, or we always talk about Hostel, was, it's because, for some reason, it's a highly praised film.
Yeah.
And a lot of people never understood that.
There's a lot of hype behind it, and I think it's completely needless. So that's the reason why I think
there's a lot of hype behind Eli Roth that is needless, too, because he's never shown anything that shows that he has any directing ability at all.
And he's, for some reason, the poster child for horror movies right now, which is amazing to me, considering he's never directed one worth a shit. But anyway, that's enough about him. But yeah.
Yeah, we got something from Mark, who mentioned a few shows ago, you guys called stores to ask if they could recommend some good horror movies. And naturally, they didn't have a clue. I just thought it was really funny, and I would like to know if you would ever plan on doing something else like that again. I think he's talking about Dial
H for horror. Will we ever do it again? Yeah. I'm pretty sure we will.
We're going to do it again. A lot of these segments we have are every once in a while segments because, you know, I think if you do it every week, people will get sick of it.
Yeah, not just that, but we have to make sure we don't call the same place twice. Or that would be bad.
What state should we call next?
Yeah, if you remember last time we did, we called West Virginia, which is an endless source of entertainment for me.
We could probably call like hundreds of stores in West Virginia. And we're thinking about calling people here, but, you know. You hear us. You hear how we talk anyway.
Yeah, you get a big chuckle.
What is it? Could it be Alabama next?
Arkansas, could it be maybe?
Georgia?
Hey, Georgia!
Or would it be funny if we called New York City?
I think to me that'd be hilarious. Oh, yes.
You can choose. We'll call whatever state you want.
Here's the next question. Comes to us from our good buddy Scott Goldberg, who is the king of all things karaoke, in my opinion.
Yeah. By far. He's got the highest vocal range I've ever heard.
I know. I think I hit a squirrel one time and it made that noise. But I'm wrong. Anyway, this says, hey, UB and CK, I understand that you guys like Dawn of the Dead more than Day of the Dead, but what was your favorite sequence in Day of the Dead? Now, hear me out before you answer, okay? I'm going to hear you out. The reason why I loved Day of the Dead so much was because I felt it was the most realistic. I also think that the characters were great and that the cinematography and overall feel of the film was dark and menacing. I think that Dawn of the Dead is a great film as well, but as far as acting and gore, I'd say Day of the Dead is the best of the quadrilogy. What was your favorite sequence from the film?
Well, my favorite sequence is always the dream sequence at the very beginning with Lori Cardell.
That was a good sequence.
And I think the whole point of that movie was, and the music had a lot to it too, I thought it was supposed to be like, the whole movie is supposed to be like a dream.
Mm-hmm.
I
agree with him that it is more realistic and more contained than Dawn of the Dead. Kind of easier to imagine something like that happening. I didn't like Day of the Dead more than Dawn of the Dead. I don't think I ever liked another movie more than Dawn of the Dead. But as far as sequences go, I always liked the Joe Pilato sequence where he first becomes the the leader, and he's trying to assert his authority, and he tells Gary Clark's character to shoot Lori Cardill. As always, my favorite sequence in the film. But there's a lot of good sequences. There's the Bub. All the Bub sequences were great, you know, where he learns to, you know. And as far as visuals go, my favorite was the opening where the, you know, the movie title rolls over the zombie with the jaw missing
yeah.
in the sun. So there's that, too. And I know that...
There's a lot of great shots in that movie.
Yeah, I know that Scott Goldberg really likes the monologue that Terry Alexander does in the end,
yeah.
or close to the end.
Yeah, I mean, I really like Day of the Dead, but I don't know. I mean, I always liked Dawn of the Dead better because I thought... I really did think the acting was probably better than Dawn of the Dead.
It was better. But a lot of people don't understand that the acting in Day of the Dead was purposely meant to be overacted, I think, a little bit more. Than, yeah. It wouldn't work if it wasn't. That's right. But...
I was talking about with... who was we talking to? I think it was Lori Cardill. Mm-hmm. About the idea of doing a Dead movie where they would bring back, I don't know, a couple of characters from all Dawn of the Dead and Day of the Dead. That'd be sort of interesting.
Somebody actually brought up an idea on the show one time that I thought, I don't remember who it was now, I thought would have been a great idea for a sequel, which was they wanted to do Dawn of the Dead from the perspective of the bikers.
Yeah.
Like they would start up.
Stagnary, didn't he talk about
it? It was either him or Garitano. I don't remember which one it was, but yeah, it would start out with, you know, them going to the mall from their perspective and what was going on, which I thought would be a cool way to do that. If you were going to remake or reimagine the film. And we got two more questions here from Scott Goldberg. And the first one is, what is your favorite horror film with Tom Atkins? Mine has to be Halloween 3. This is an easy one for me, Night of the Creeps.
So let me try to be different. Creepshow.
That's different.
He was in Creepshow.
Yeah.
I'm just going to name a different movie. I really like Night of the Creeps better too, probably, but.
I just think that's probably one of my favorite roles in any horror film ever would be his role in Night of the Creeps, so that's not really fair. And the second, or actually the third question from Scott Goldberg is, hey guys, what was the most times you've seen a movie in a row with commentary? I've watched Day of the Dead 3 times today with 2 with commentary, learning more about it and finding out little new interesting things. Interesting when you notice something new every time. Okay. So I guess what was the most times you've seen a movie in a row?
I don't do that a lot.
I don't think I've ever watched a movie in a row, like a bunch of times.
When I was a kid, I used to watch The Goonies every day. I don't know if I watched it in a row. The Goonies and Stand By Me were 2 movies that I always watched as a little kid. But, fuck, I don't do that now. I haven't done that. I don't know if I ever did that since then.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of commentary tracks either. They just annoy the piss out of me. I'll watch them for some of my favorite films, like... The Dawn of the Dead commentary track, Texas Chainsaw Massacre commentary.
Yeah, he's talking about the Day of the Dead commentary. Day of the Dead commentary is actually pretty good. It's got Tom Savini, Lori Cardell, and George Romero mm-hmm. on there. And I think they have somebody else as like a moderator.
I watched the Return of the Living Dead one, and it almost made me go to sleep. Because Dan O'Bannon's got to be the most boring son of a bitch I've ever heard talk.
Yeah,
and he's an asshole, too. I mean, he makes you just want to, like, hate him in that commentary.
Yeah. But there's some good commentaries, though, like... there's a few from, I think there's at least 2, maybe 3 in that Dawn of the Dead Ultimate Edition. I think there's 3, actually. Because there's three different movies, and there's commentaries on each one. It sounds like that take all day to get, or all year for us. But
yeah, I don't think I've ever watched a film back to back, no matter how much I liked it, really.
I haven't either. Not horror-wise, at least. Something from Death Ray, who's also a new member on the board, and we appreciate all the new members going on the deadpit.com message board. We're getting a fair amount of people signing up now, finally.
Yeah, which we do appreciate all the posts.
He mentions that he found the show through FridayThe13thFilms.com and has been listening ever since May of the Dead, the Tom Savini. And he's mentioned he's been catching up on the archives. I've heard you guys talk on the show about Halloween, the Curse of Michael Myers, being the shittiest of the Halloween series. And I couldn't agree more. Well, I don't know if we said it was the shittiest.
I don't ever remember saying that. I was reading that
it's,
earlier.
I might have said it. Who knows? But I actually think...
I would consider Resurrection to be by far the shittiest of the Halloween series.
It definitely is. And I would actually put Curse of Michael Myers, I would say it's better than H2O, too.
I don't know. I liked H2O for some reason. A lot of people don't like it, but I did.
Anyway, I was wondering if you guys ever had the pleasure of seeing The Producer's Cut. It's a far better film than its shitty theatrical counterpart, and it should have been the one to follow up Part 5 in theaters. It answers most, if not all, your questions from the previous films and doesn't leave you with that, oh, what the fuck did I just waste an hour and 20 minutes of my life on feeling?
Yeah. There's quite a few people that think that The Producer's Cut, that people have actually seen it, fans of the series think that it's a lot better film than Part 6. I've never seen it, but you could get it on eBay, I know.
Yeah, I've actually got it on my computer, and I'll burn it and we'll watch it sometime and review it on the show, I guess.
Yeah.
Might do that around Halloween.
As if we don't have enough shit to do around Halloween.
Well, that at least, you know, that's something that we won't mind doing, I don't think. I've always wanted to see that anyway.
Yeah, I have too.
But thanks for the email, though. We really appreciate that. Glad you liked the show.
Here comes the question this week from MagicFan41653. He says, here's my serious question for the week. Okay. He apparently had like 9 questions. Yeah, we whittled it down.
Yeah, this is another thing we need to say. If you're going to post a question and there's another case where the guy did this and he actually got pissed off that we didn't read it last week, and there was a reason we didn't read it last week. Anthropophagus had some sort of silly fucking question. What do we know if we cuddled with each other and shit?
And I just want everybody to know that our cuddling habits are your goddamn business.
That's right. Please. Oh, I mean, we got a lot of questions to get through. You people might not realize that, but, you know, we actually do get email questions and stuff from time to time, too. So.
Yeah, but just to be equal opportunity, the answer to the question from Anthropophagus is no, we don't live together. So I think that was part of the question.
Yeah.
So this question is from Magic Fan. He says, here's my serious question for the week. Do you guys feel horror might never again have any original film made that changes the industry and creates a whole nother genre, subgenre, the way that Halloween and Night of the Living Dead did, or has society just gotten to the point that even if a film of that caliber came out, not enough people would go to see it, therefore preventing Hollywood from changing its present course of mindless copy-paste films? Whew. Do I think that there'll never be another film that revolutionizes the genre? Hell no, I think there'll...
If we think like that, we might as well kill ourselves.
Yeah, there's always another film. Every time anybody starts to think like that, along comes a film like Scream. Or, you know...
What I love is, though, is when, you know, sometimes some of these people instant message me and stuff, and they're like, but all the original ideas are taken.
No, they're not.
And I was like, I'm sure that 40 years ago, there's probably people saying that.
Exactly.
You know?
And that's the same way with music right now. A lot of people think that all the best, you know, songs and all the best riffs have already been taken, but they've not. It's just somebody will come along, they always do in movies or music, and completely change everything.
That's what we're hoping for.
Every so often, every couple of years, it might take more this time around, but it'll happen. In my opinion, it will definitely happen again.
I think it will, too. Next question comes from our favorite wanker in the UK by the name of Vampire. He wants to know what do we feel about the horror comedy genre.
I think we got a question similar to that a couple weeks
ago. He mentioned they loved Young Frankenstein, Return of the Living Dead, and Killer Clowns, but it's gone to shit with the Scary Movie franchise. And he also says, keep up the good work as a 37-year-old. Thanks for not talking to me like I'm a 12-year-old cunt who has watched too much MTV.
Yeah. Well, you're welcome. We try not to talk to
people. Yeah, we just talk to Donnie like that. So.
Yeah. What do I think about the horror comedy? I probably like it more than CK and more than a lot of other people do, because I tend to get a bigger kick out of films like Blood Diner that are geared toward a comedy aspect than just all-out serious movies, more like the Italian genre and stuff. So, yeah, I don't mind them. I don't think they hurt much of anything.
They pretty much don't exist anymore, unless you want to watch, like, independent movies and stuff.
Yeah.
You're not going to catch them in theaters. But I like them, too.
I thought Destruction Kings was one of the funniest movies I've seen for hell and ever. I even, not related to horror.
It was definitely politically incorrect, the entire movie was. And I think a lot of the people in Hollywood just, they don't want to be a part of that. They just, everything has to be PC. You've got to have at least one Chinese guy and one black woman in a movie now, or, you know, they don't like it.
But as far as horror comedies now, like, I think Scary Movie is probably the only franchise that does that. And that last one, just, if they don't quit after that shit, they're never going to quit, and it's just going to get worse. And that was horrible.
It's completely shit. Yeah.
Next question we got comes to us from a guy that's probably got my favorite username on the whole board. It's called, comes to us from Mr. Fulci to you.
That's right.
And it says, "Hi guys, James from New Zealand here. I have a question for you, discussion. I hate one classic film with a passion, so much so that it causes mass mayhem on horror forums." No shit. So here it is. The one film I refuse to watch ever again is The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I never have and never will like it. Does this make me weird? I have only ever had maybe two or three others who agree with my stance or been brave enough to admit it. So do you chaps like it, hate it, or other? And for the record, I love The Blair Witch. And that's Mr. Fulci to you.
Yeah, and this post evidently drove some people insane on the message board, to say the least.
Yeah, there are some people that got some sand in their vaginas.
And I really don't agree with it, like with what he's saying. I mean, I really love The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but I can sort of sympathize because you and I both hate Hostel and Cabin Fever, which is loved on the internet. People think you're nuts if you don't like it.
I mean, honest to God, though, I can see why somebody wouldn't like Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I can see why somebody wouldn't like almost any horror film that I like, because it's just subjective. I mean, it's just somebody's opinion. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre was not intended to be like a mass audience type of movie anyway.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a, looks like a snuff film, and it's, in parts, it doesn't really flow well, and it's not very coherent. So I can see why somebody wouldn't like it, especially people that like mainstream horror films today. Does it make you weird? No, not really. It just makes
you... This sparked a big debate about which is better, The Blair Witch Project or Texas Chainsaw
Massacre.
That's
got to be one of the stupidest fucking debates I've ever heard. How in the world are those two movies even, aside from the marketing campaign...
They're not really comparable at all.
How are they comparable? That's two different decades, completely different genres of film.
Yeah.
What the hell? Silly bitches.
I mean, people on our message board are really taking this shit a little bit too far. You know, I mean, we need to say that because, you know, a lot of people probably take advantage of our moderation on the board, which is not really any moderation.
Yeah.
And I think, seriously, personal attacking somebody because they like or don't like a certain movie is fucking bullshit.
That's true. I mean, the fact is that we hate Eli Roth's movies. But we don't personally attack people who like Eli Roth's movies. We just hate the movies and the director.
Yep.
Okay? So, just, you know, hate the film and not the film goer.
Yeah. Don't hate the player. Hate the game.
That's right. So, there's that question. And I hope everybody continues to bitch and carry on about our response to the question.
Yeah, and people on the message board, don't take shit seriously all the time. Jesus fucking Christ. It's a fucking message board. People talk about horror movies. You know, you don't have to be a certain age to know what you're talking about as far as horror goes. Okay?
Yeah.
And I'm sure we've
you
got
do, however,
13, 14-year-olds like Donnie Miller and Anthropophagus on there. They post on there too, and that's fine. Okay?
But you do, however, have to smoke mass quantities of weed to know what you're talking about in horror films,
if
apparently.
You want to talk to the hydroponic, yeah.
Yeah.
So, we're going to go on. I got a question here from HD1201C.
Is that a barcode?
It's not B, it's C.
That's right.
Okay. Mentioned, great show as usual, guys. A few quick questions for the show. I just saw The Descent. It was fucking awesome. But what are the differences between the American ending and the one the rest of the world got? Well, from what I've been
told... Should we really tell people that?
Well, cover your ears if you haven't seen The Descent.
I guess this would be what you would call a spoiler alert.
Yeah. And people don't like it. We spoil some of their enjoying...
Yeah, I always thought that shit was silly, but go ahead.
Spoiler coming up.
Shh! Very quiet.
You fucking don't listen. Okay, we didn't see The Descent in theaters. unfortunately. We didn't get to see it, and I don't know if we really wanted to go watch it again. We've been watching too many horror movies as it is, but the original ending, as I remember it, the lone surviving girl, I can't remember her name, has a dream that she has escaped from the underground caves and all that, and she awakens to find out she's back in the cave and she's fucked, she's going to die there. Now, the U.S. version, from what I understand, she got out alive, it's a happy ending. It's not that surprising.
Yeah, because we have to have shit watered down for us here. Yeah. We can't take anything
but
happy.
Happy endings, I mean.
That would be wrong.
End of spoiler. You can now turn your speakers back out. So, he also has, other than the crap Eli Roth and Uwe Boll put out, who would you say is doing the most damage to the horror genre right now?
There's a couple of people I can think of that come to mind. I'm not sure if these people are doing damage to the horror genre, but I can definitely say that they're getting a certain amount of attention for stuff that they probably shouldn't be getting attention for, like lower than average films.
Yeah.
They're getting way too much hype. But Paul W.S. Anderson's definitely another guy I can think of, because he's damaging the genre in the fact that he's one of the main guys behind the video game craze of releasing horror video games and turn them into movies.
I'm going to say this. I don't think it's any one person. But I think that the executives behind these major companies are allowing for this shit to happen because the people are going to see it.
You want to talk about that, then I'd say the Weinsteins are probably
the
guys most directly responsible for the shit that comes out today.
Finally, along the same lines as the above question, who should we as horror fans really be paying attention in hopes of granting horror the change it needs from the current remake sequel hell?
Okay.
This is a tough one, too, because, of course we can mention some independent people, but I don't think that the big studios are even paying much attention to them.
Well, they never do, but... Well, I would have said Aja before he did a remake. That just kind of throws him in with everybody else now.
I would say Lucky McKee, if he would ever get the shot for a movie to hit theaters.
Yeah.
For some reason, they never gave him a shot.
I would almost say Tim Sullivan. Because he's...
Again, that's somebody else that doesn't get the chance to release a movie in theaters.
Yeah, I know, but that he often talks about that too, but at least he got on Lionsgate, which is a moderate, release skin film. There's a bunch of other independent people, but I would say people you could watch out for and definitely at least buy some of their films would be Rolf Kanievski, Christopher Garitano, I'd watch out for him.
Chris Seaver.
Yeah, definitely Chris Seaver too.
Low Budget Pictures, check that out. There's a guy that we're going to be talking about in a little bit, reviewing one of his movies, four of his little short movies.
Yeah, Patrick Ray.
And we really did like him, and we'll be talking about them later. And he's actually a really, really talented filmmaker.
And I'll tell you something else, somebody else that I'd watch out for, too. I don't think she'll probably ever make it past the independent stage just because of the stuff that she makes, but Melantha Blackthorne would be somebody that I enjoy watching their stuff, and not just because of her big boobies.
Well, that helps.
It does. It
doesn't hurt. Last thing on here. He mentioned, I was just on a stupid horror movie website that claimed that the Italian zombie movie series Blind Dead was about to be remade. And that wouldn't surprise me a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any truth to the rumor that you know of about that? No, I've not heard anything about it.
I have never heard anything about that either.
Also, are the original films worth watching?
Haven't seen them.
No. I actually have a VHS of one of those movies, but I never have watched it. I got the flea market.
Isn't there a huge box set of that out right now?
Yeah, I think our good pals at Blue Underground has the box set of that.
One of the only holdouts, yeah. But I've never seen them. I would like to see them just for the sake to say that I saw them.
I hear there's one of them that's really good, and the other ones are all right,
Okay, finally we got a question from Rick of the Dead, who's one of the newest members of the board.
You know, if there's anybody out there named Dick of the Dead, would be fucking killing it.
Yeah. But this is not so much as, I don't think it's a question as much as it is just a comment, but it says, I just want to say I just recently started listening to the show because of a friend. I really appreciate hearing a horror show that tells news, reviews, etc. Plus, I like how you guys talk about indie companies and directors, which we just did. Myself being an indie filmmaker myself. He actually wrote, myself being an indie filmmaker myself. You guys are doing a great job. Rick of the Dead.
And I believe that I actually talked to that guy on IM.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to be sending us some of his movies too for review.
Which we look forward to reviewing any and all films that we can here at Dead Pit.
Yeah. And we're getting a big pile of them. I just want to say that.
But that's it for the fan mail portion of the show.
Yeah. And also, I forgot to mention this earlier, but we gave away some DVDs last week, and Jodge a Zombie from the message board was the winner on that, folks. We'll be giving some more stuff away from time to time, so keep listening to DeadBit.com. And we'll be back with some DVD reviews and closing out the show.
And we'll have all that right after these words from our sponsors.
Somewhere in the woods of Deep Barren, a woman and her sons live in isolation. When they come out, it's for one reason only.
Now let's see what you brought, Mother.
Some say she spoiled her boys. Some say she drove them mad. No one who found out has lived to tell.
Darlings, you have made your mother very proud.
Charles Kaufman's Mother's Day.
Howdy, folks. Welcome back here to DeadPit.com. I am Uncle Bill.
And I'm the Creepy Kentuckian.
And this is the review section of the show. And for those of you not familiar with this, what the hell's wrong with you? Haven't you been paying attention?
You're crazy.
This is where we review from DVDs that we've gotten from the last week.
That's right, and we've got a fairly decent size amount of reviews and shit.
Yeah, we've actually got, I guess, three feature films this week, and then we're going to do four short films from Patrick Ray, which I think are all worth mentioning on the show.
And we're going to entitle it The Patrick Ray Collection.
Yeah, the Special Collector's Edition of Patrick Ray. So the first film we got up is called Twisted Sisters from director Wolfgang Bild. And
Wolfgang.
Yeah. This is an overseas horror film about two identical twin sisters, one of them which is evil, the other which is good. You may have seen this plot before in Brian De Palma's Sisters, or you may have seen it in Dead Ringers.
I've never seen Sisters or Dead Ringers.
Countless films that have identical twins playing. Or you might, I think Raising Cain was another one like that, but I think maybe John Lithgow was both personalities in that movie, I don't remember. Regardless, it's a film about, like I said, identical twin sisters who they don't know about each other. And one of them is like a uptight, socialite type of person who has, you know, someone very close to her. She makes a lot of money. And the other one is basically...
Had a lot of problems.
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
She's psychopathic, if you will.
And
she doesn't like men at all.
Yeah, this is true. And you find out why towards the end of the movie.
She likes to stab men right in the balls.
And there are some gruesome castration scenes in this film.
Yeah.
And as the film goes on, you know, they begin to learn about each other. And the plot begins to thicken. And so I won't attempt to ruin the ending, but basically this film has been done a couple of other times that I can remember. And it's got some really decent gore scenes in it, but it's way too slow-paced, and the acting is fairly bad, especially from the people that are the police officers in the film. And the main lead, who I don't remember the name of, but the woman who plays both roles, is a pretty decent actress. I mean, she's
pretty hot, too.
Yeah, she is, and she gets naked in the film. So there is gratuitous nudity in the film as well.
I really thought that the movie, after about the first 20 minutes, it wasn't that bad. It took a long time for it to get started.
Yeah.
You didn't know what the hell was going on for, like, you know, the first 20 to 30 minutes. And how long was the movie? It was like 2 hours almost, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I don't think it was 2 hours, but it was close to like an hour and 40 some minutes.
It was definitely over like 90 minutes.
Yeah, but
that's considered long by my standards.
Yeah, as most movies are either 80 to 90 minutes that we get, but I wouldn't recommend that you buy it because, like I said, there's other movies that did this format a lot better. And this movie kind of reminds me of Lionsgate movies, even though I'm pretty sure it wasn't Lionsgate. I think it was MPI that put it up.
Yeah, I think some people probably would enjoy it. I mean, if you're into the slowly paced, more of a story, I guess, but it's not really that well like scripted or anything. I don't know. It was okay. It wasn't a complete piece of shit, like, you know, a few movies we've talked about on there.
But if you're interested in that kind of psychological thriller type of thing, then go to mtivideo.com and you can check out their releases.
Check
and
it out now.
It's one of the new releases on there. That's Twisted Sisters. We're not going to take it. No, we ain't going to take it. No, we're going to take it up the butt like these times.
The next one we're going to talk about from Anchor Bay Entertainment, from producer Stephen J. Cannell, who brought us the films from Anchor Bay before It Waits, was another one he did, and The Garden, which we reviewed on here before.
The Lance Hendrickson masterpiece.
This one is The Tooth Fairy now, and is don't mistake it with Darkness Falls.
Which I actually read was one time titled The Tooth Fairy.
Yeah, it was. This one is about a witch who was nicknamed the Tooth Fairy. You know, it was earlier set in the 40s, I believe. The film opens in the 40s. And she tricks children into her house where she promises to give them a shiny new bike or, you know, whatever for their last baby tooth. But she welches on that and ends up killing them instead after she gets the tooth.
That's right.
And that's the legend. And then, you know, you go to present day. It's a lot like the 80s horror slasher movies. There's always a earlier time period. Then you go to present day. I don't know how many are like that. And you've got a familiar group of actors and actresses in this movie.
Yeah, they're familiar in the kind of way where you know you've seen them in something else, but you can't think of what it is, and you don't really want to spend time trying to think that hard.
Lachlan Monroe, who was in Freddy vs. Jason. Okay, he was like a cop in that, I believe.
He played a stoner in some movie I've seen, too, but I can't remember what it was.
He's been in a lot of stuff. Yeah. Chandra West is also in this from White Noise, and I really didn't know who she was because I don't remember much from that movie. PJ Souls is also in this briefly.
She does her, like, best Irish accent,
But what it is Lachlan Monroe's character is starting a bed and breakfast in the old Tooth Fairy's house.
Hey, dear, what's for breakfast?
Breakfast. He was going to know because he's starting a bed and breakfast. So his girlfriend, which is Chandra West, and her daughter come there to visit, and the Tooth Fairy shows herself to the little girl. And, you know, you pretty much know what's going to happen.
Not literally shows herself, like exposes herself, but she just shows up.
Well, she's a ghost now, I guess. And not everybody can see her. The little girl can, so. And a lot of killing, a lot of gore, and some magnificent breasts in this one.
Oh, my God. I just want to say that if anybody's seen the Jennifer episode of Masters of Horror, you know you've seen Carrie Ann Fleming, but you probably don't recognize her because she played the character Jennifer.
Yeah.
But she's in this movie in her, you know, just regular state. That's some of the best pair of titties I've ever seen. I'm not even joking.
She's fucking hot. I mean, you know, hot.
Hot.
That's all I can say.
Molten lava hot.
But, you know, we're not going to give the story away. I mean, a lot of people can probably guess what it is. It's more along the lines of a slasher.
It is a slasher, yeah.
With, you know, some fantasy elements, I guess.
Here's the thing I didn't like about the movie, okay? I didn't like the cast, except for maybe Carrie Ann Fleming because of the boobs thing. But I didn't like them just because they seemed like they didn't know what the hell they were doing, and they're just all standing around waiting for, you know, something to read their lines. And it just didn't flow very well. They didn't have any chemistry, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And the story itself is kind of hokey, but in a, I guess, an 80s hokey kind of way. The makeup effects that the actual witch wears are shitty. But the things I did like was it did have some really good, just old-school makeup gore scenes in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like the, there's one I remember where a girl gets nail gunned up to a wall and then chopped to pieces with an axe.
Yeah. And you actually do get to see it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it did have some good scenes like that. If you like that type of throwaway 80s slasher movie, it was good in that regard.
Yeah. I thought it was filmed pretty good, too. I mean, it looked like it was actually had a decent-sized budget. I don't know if it did or not, but
yeah, it was. At least it was on 35mm. I'm pretty sure.
And I thought the little girl was a pretty good actress in it, and I've never seen her in anything before.
Yeah,
most little kid actors are really annoying, but
another thing that throws it off too is just. And I love PJ Souls. Okay, I loved her in Carrie and Halloween and all that, Stripes and everything she was in the 80s, but that was the most horrible, like, just cameo appearances that just made you took you completely out of the film because the accent was so bad. There's even points in it where she's trying to have an Irish accent, I think, but there's points where she just completely drops it, and there's points where she picks it back up.
Yeah,
it's just I didn't like that role at all.
So that's The Tooth Fairy. Anchor Bay just released this last week.
I'd say the best thing I can say for that movie is it's not as bad as you might think.
That's what I told you. I mean, maybe that's why I liked it a little bit more than you did, because I was just expecting it to be really, 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 really bad.
Oh, it's bad. But it's not as bad as you might think.
It's not really, 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 really bad.
Yeah.
If you're a fan of 80s slashers, you will probably like it. Just for the gore. And I thought the Tooth Fairy character looked pretty cool. I mean, it had old school makeup. Didn't have any much CG at all in it.
Yeah, that's one good thing. I guess you say there's no CG, but I thought the makeup effects on the Tooth Fairy were kind of bad. I don't know who did the makeup effects, but
Greg Nicotero's second cousin.
That's what it looks like. Yeah. Slightly retarded.
So what's next, though? I mean, the Tooth Fairy, I'd probably give it 2.5 out of 5 stars.
Yeah. Rent the damn thing if you're interested in that kind of stuff. I guess next up will be Flesh for the Beast, which is the second film that I've seen from Terry M. West, with Satan Schoolgirls being the first, and that film I actually liked quite a bit.
Yeah.
So here you go. You got your classic huge house that is supposedly haunted, and you've got a group of paranormal investigators that are called upon to supposedly rid the house of, you know, evil spirits. But
God,
you know, as with, you know, most plots like this, the owner of the mansion has ulterior motives, which you don't find out about until later on, about why he wants the paranormal investigators there.
Let's just go ahead and say that there's not really even a story to it.
Yeah.
I mean, what he was saying is basically true, but they never go back to that. They have the story in the very beginning.
Yeah, they have the explanation.
Then they don't pay any attention to it afterwards. And did somebody scream just out there? Yeah, I don't know. But whole movie,
being killed out there.
The whole basis of this movie is gore and titties,
which was also the basis of Satan Schoolgirls. And I just have to say that for me, that works well.
Yeah, it's a pretty good gore effects, and I had some really hot women in it too.
Yeah. Okay. So what happens after that? After the initial, you know, introduction of the paranormal investigators, is they go basically from room to room, and it's a bunch of different death scenes. That's basically what it is.
And it's a bit like the girls who haunt the house, right?
Yeah, the spirits in the house.
They basically want to fuck the...
I think it was at one time a brothel, wasn't it?
They
were like prostitutes.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that the guy that owned the house was supposed to be an occultist who ran a brothel there. So each room they go into, there's some hot naked chick that, you know, wants to have sex with them, but then they turn into these really weird ass looking, like, dog.
They look almost like Jennifer's.
Yeah, that's kind of what they look like. And they proceed to rip the people in half or cause some kind of...
Movies like this are really cool to watch with a bunch of friends. But it's a fun movie like that, but it doesn't have really a story to it. Follow through with the story. It's basically just an excuse for a bunch of boobs and gore. And that I have to support that. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I mean, you have to support boobs and gore. What in the hell? But, yeah, that's the basic, without giving away the ending, the basic story. And the actual DVD, the actual DVD comes to us from Shriek Show, who are big friends of ours, too.
Yeah, who actually Shriek Show didn't send it to us.
Terry M. West himself sent the film. But you can go to fleshforthebeast.com also and get and check this film out. And it's got the basic behind-the-scenes featurette. And it's actually got a thing that's kind of funny. It's Buckethead does the score for the film. And he's got a couple music videos of him doing different things for the film in it, too, which I thought was kind of amusing.
Another fan of Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Yeah, a big fan. Yeah. And there you go. That's Flesh for the Beast from Terry M. West.
That's right. Now, this next batch of films I want to talk about is four short movies. And I'm not sure if they're available to buy or not. I know that Patrick Ray's website is senoreality.com, and it's spelled S-E-N-O-R-E-A-L-I-T-Y. So you can go check that out. And these are really interesting movies. And I guess we can just talk about one at a time.
Okay.
An anthology style.
And I have to say that when you first gave me these, because they came in just basic, like, what?
Jewel cases,
yeah. I didn't expect much. I didn't expect anything from them, actually. I thought they would be horrible. I've probably never been more surprised at any film, whether it be a short film or a feature film, you know, than these films. I thought they were, well, we'll get into the reviews, but I thought they were all great. Actually.
First up, and I'm going to get this over with because I do think that it was probably, it wasn't bad, but it was my least favorite of the four short tales. This one is The Last Laugh.
Yeah.
Which was directed by Patrick Graves, and it says, this one's about a crazy fucking clown who, he looks, I don't know, is he trying to look a little bit like Sid Haig, maybe? He's of that, he's not trying to look like him, but he's of that style. He looks,
yeah, he looks like an old, like, old, bum, yeah. Dressed up like a clown.
Yeah. And, you know, he's going to punish this mime until he laughs out loud. That's the whole point of the movie.
Which is a great concept in itself, because who in the hell doesn't hate a mime?
Yeah.
But, yeah. The way that he goes about punishing him is kind of funny, too. He beats him with, like, a plastic baseball bat. It's, like, made out of one of the ones that squeaks when you hit people with him.
Yeah. And this one lasts probably, what, 6 minutes?
Yeah, seven I can't minutes. Remember exactly how long it lasts, but, yeah.
And, see, the next one we're going to talk about is, how about, well, this one's pretty cool. Zero the Counter, is that the name of it?
Mm-hmm. It kind of reminded me of, there was another film we watched where two serial killers meet each other. Oh, yeah, I know what it was. It was the Master of Horror
episode, Pick Me Up,
yeah. It kind of reminded me of that, but I think it might have been executed a little bit better than that whole episode, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's basically about a woman, a female serial killer, who pretends to be a prostitute to get picked up and then slays male victims, who ends up getting picked up by a male serial killer who picks up prostitutes to kill them.
Yeah.
And then what ensues is the conversation that they both have and how they interact, both of them.
And they both at the end decide to join forces.
It was a really cool idea, really well written and really well acted, too. That's another thing that we need to talk about all these short films. They're all really well acted and directed, and I think they're on real film, too. It's not digital.
Yeah, and we're going to talk more about just the technical aspects, because this is what really surprised me the most about these movies, besides the fact that they're really well done, I mean, direction-wise and stuff. Next one, Hell to Pay, which is about a wife who is mistreated by her husband's asshole, pretty much.
The quintessential asshole character in every horror film. Yeah,
yeah, who is never happy about anything that she does. Like, is not happy about the meal she fixes. Doesn't have his favorite flavor pie for dessert. And it's just an old grumpy bastard, pretty much.
Yeah.
So, the wife has had enough, and she's watching on TV infomercial something.
He was like a voodoo priestess who made dolls, voodoo dolls.
Yeah.
But she didn't call them voodoo dolls. She called them something else, but I can't remember.
Yeah. So she decides to make some voodoo dolls or voodoo doll for her husband and punish him for being bad.
And what ends up happening is kind of like odd twist of fate that happens at the end, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Really but, cool.
Yeah.
I like that one a lot. The last one.
Probably my favorite is the last one.
Women's Intuition.
It's one of those stories where you're sitting there watching it and you know something's going to happen and you're trying to figure out what it is. But to me, anyway, I could not for life of me figure out what was going to happen at the end. And when I did get to see what happened, I was just absolutely blown away because I thought it was such a unique idea. But it's basically about a woman who's psychic. And she's not psychic, but she has these psychic premonitions of when anything bad is going to happen. She hears this buzzing in her ear. And it's been throughout her whole life she's gotten out of situations that were dangerous because she would hear this buzzing. She goes to a doctor and says that basically she's been hearing the buzzing constantly now, and she can't get it to stop, and she can't figure out why it is, because it's always been right before.
Because she didn't know if it was where she lived, so she basically been traveling for months, trying to get away from whatever's causing the noise in her head.
And she goes to the doctor because she thinks she has cancer or some kind of terminal disease, and that's why she keeps hearing it. So, but
the ending of this is really awesome.
Yeah, it is.
Well, I won't give it away. All right, taking in all these movies, all four of these movies, the best thing to me is he doesn't want to accept an independent look. You know, his movies are obviously independent, but they look fucking awesome. I mean, there's no better way to say it. It's probably filmed on film, I'm hoping. I don't know.
It looks like it. It has to be. 60 millimeter blown up to 35, maybe, or just kept 16. But, yeah.
The movies are actually in 5.1, too, which is, hey, I mean, that's awesome that he can do that. And the music is really great in all the movies.
The acting is amazing, too, actually, considering that, you know, none of these people I've ever seen.
Another great thing, too, is all these movies have different actors in
them. Yeah, they do. It's not like
a lot of independent, because, hey, a lot of people in the independent world can't really afford to hire different actors. But a lot of the other independent movies we review from the same director, they've got a lot of the same people in them, you know. And that's sort of, you know, I don't know, it's sort of annoying to see the same people in every movie.
I'll say two things about the movie. Number one being is, and this is probably the highest compliment I can pay to anybody who does film like this, it most reminded me of like the old Twilight Zone series. And it was, you know, they're shorter than those episodes, but it has that same feeling to it, and it's actually as clever as those old episodes used to be. The second thing is that he accomplishes exactly what, if to make a short film you want to accomplish getting a feature film, which is what most people do short films for, I can see any one of these films being transformed into a feature.
As I remember, I believe he emailed me and told me that he finished his first feature film.
Yeah, so, but I couldn't wait to see that, actually, now that I know these films. But
this guy, I mean, is probably one of the more talented directors that we've ever reviewed on here, I have to say, actually.
He really is. I mean, it shocked the hell out of me that short films could be this good.
All of these movies, from 6 minutes to, what, 15, 20 minutes?
Yeah, at the most.
They use all that time perfectly, too, you know. It isn't. There's nothing.
He accomplishes more in 6 minutes than John Hand accomplished in the, I don't know, what,
hour and 25 minutes, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, he's more intelligent, more subversive, and more articulate than that guy ever thought about being in 6 minutes. Which, I mean, that's honest.
I really highly recommend everybody going and check these movies out, and probably, if you can purchase them on the site, I haven't had the chance to check the site out, but you can go to senoreality.com, S-E-N-O, reality.com. Check that out. Highly recommend it.
I recommend that probably more so than any other short films that I've seen.
Yeah. I mean, there's a few short films we've seen that are really, really good.
Yeah, there is.
But the difference between these and those are these don't look like independent movies.
No, they don't. They look like some kind of TV series from the 80s that you would see, like Tales from the Dark Side or something.
But, yeah, be on the lookout for Patrick Ray, though. I mean, I'm really glad that he sent us those movies.
Yep.
Well, we've talked enough.
That's true, and I hope everybody enjoyed the interview and our ramblings this week. Next week,
we'll have some more news that's actually interesting to talk about next week.
Yeah, the news is really inconsequential on this show, though, but next week will be the Horror Roundtable, hopefully.
Yeah.
If we can get another person to join the Horror Roundtable.
Yeah, and send in your applications. We want your resumes.
Along with a headshot, and we need a driver's license, proof of insurance. And yeah. That's all I'm willing.
And it's a $75 entrance fee.
That's true, yeah.
But we'll be back next week with the Horror Roundtable. I don't know who we'll have. We don't want anyone to say anybody because we don't know what will happen by then.
Yeah.
But, well, also on the website, I guess we need to mention that Eliza Swenson has a new interview on there. You may remember her from Dracula's Curse or The Beast of Bray Road.
Uh-huh.
Or she's in a movie with Angus Scrimm called Satanic. She's in all those movies. Dr. Mwamba has an interview with her. Check that out on the website. Deadpit.com. So until next week, you keep them motherfucking snakes off them motherfucking planes.
Mm-hmm.
And that guy that just got arrested for killing JonBenet Ramsey didn't kill her.
He didn't do it. I'm telling you that.
I'm predicting that right now.
He's batshit crazy, but he did not kill her.
Yeah. So until next week, I am the Creepy Kentuckian.
And I'm sick of all these motherfucking snakes on this motherfucking plane.
So, thanks for listening.
Good.
Fight for your life.